Lemons. I've started feeling the baby move. It first happened at Mitre 10. We were looking for a new broom. I thought my phone was vibrating. "You didn't bring your phone," said N. Our baby was vibrating. I have an app called Flow. Every week it sends me an update to tell me what size the baby is. This week it is as big as a Napa cabbage. I've never bought a Napa cabbage before, never even picked one up in a supermarket, so this information means very little to me. Flo tells me that I may be experiencing some difficulty sleeping due to the increased pressure on my bladder and an inability to find a comfortable spot. "But don't worry," it says. "The baby will be out in 8 weeks." I quickly close the app and open something else. Boris Johnson has declared his commitment to a no-deal Brexit. I read 3 articles about it so that I don't have to think about how there are only 8 weeks left, about how I don't even know if I want this. I haven't slept for 2 days. I haven't slept for 2 days because I can't lie down. I can't lie down because my right shoulder is doing something very weird and very painful. I try watching a movie. I have to do it standing up. I haul out all the spare blankets to ward off the cold, and when the movie is over, I have a 40-minute shower. Then I watch another movie. I ignore the tightness in my pelvis, because all my attention is on my shoulder, in an endless loop of why is this happening? Why is it so sore? Can I take that codeine I found in the bathroom? I'll Google it. No, I can't take it. How often can I take paracetamol? How much paracetamol is considered dangerous? Why is this happening? When N wakes up, he takes me to the doctor. The doctor gives me a script of Norflex, a muscle relaxant, and the names of some apps for calmness and relaxing. I swallow 2 pills and wait. When nothing happens, I cry and panic and pace some more. In calls the midwife. "Take her to ED," she says. While we wait to be seen in ED, I walk between the chair at the back of the room and the toilet several hundred times. There is a game show playing on the television above reception. It has one of the Spice Girls on it. She is trying to push round discs over the edge of a ledge to try to win money. The volume is muted, but we all watch it because there is nothing else to look at when we get bored of our phones. I try sitting down. At one point, I lean over the chair. The receptionist puts her head out from behind the perspex and asks N if I've gone into labour. "No, it's her shoulder," he says. "Oh, that's okay then," she replies. The Spice Girl fails to push the coloured disc over the edge that will bring her all the money in the world. N looks distressed. I tell him to go outside. It is raining. Through the glass doors, I watch him kicking stones before coming back inside and buying some bliss balls from the vending machine in the entranceway. In the waiting room, nurses come and go from some mysterious place behind the doors. They shuffle our folders around. Pink and blue and green and yellow plastic folders with triage notes. I hear one of them say, "Shoulder pain, you've got to be kidding." The man with gout in his foot tells me that the folders with the pink stripes are the ones for the people who come by ambulance. They get priority, so that's why they keep shuffling things around. "You're better off paying the $90 for the big white taxi, just so you don't have to wait out here for hours," he says. At ED, they ask me what my pain is on a scale of 1 to 10. I'm still crying and say, "Maybe 8, with more question than answer in my voice. I look around the waiting room. Here we all are together, I think, in our various pains. How can anyone judge their own pain scale? That man with the gout, the young girl with what may be appendicitis. If I had a different personality, maybe I'd say 10. I think that my pain is not as bad as other people's, but who am I to know? Everyone looks so miserable. At least I'm not in labour. That must be a number 10, surely. In hospital, the baby moves all night, as if to say, I'm still here. I see another pregnant woman, but she's here to sit beside her husband's bed while he dozes in and out of morphine dreams, perhaps. I see her looking at me, and she sees me looking at her. We must be about the same. 26 weeks. A doctor comes to see me in the middle of the night. He brings a nurse who wheels a machine along beside her, and he tells me they're going to do an ultrasound on my legs. I am in the middle of a morphine cycle, and so I smile and I think that this is the most beautiful man in the world. When he tells me to lie back and lift up my gown so he can take a look at my upper legs, I tell him I've still got my knickers on. He says, "That's good," and smiles. I think about this a lot the next day. I tell Ian when he comes back to see me in the hospital, and he tells me not to worry. "He's really lovely," says Ian. "And besides, doctors must hear shit like that all the time." I stop worrying. In the hierarchy of worries, this one has been knocked off the list. They do lots of tests. After 24 hours, they tell me I can go home. It's musculoskeletal, they say, and that an osteopath or a physiotherapist may be able to help me. In the weeks following, the pain begins to ease, but like some kind of infection, it spreads down my arm. The osteopath tells me this is my nerves and that my rotator cuff has been damaged. "You've made a right mess of the shoulder," he says. I imagine a city after an earthquake, all that damage just below the surface. The liquefaction may be my many tears. This is the first time I've been to an osteopath. He straps me up so I can't move my shoulders. The next time I see him, he tells me I have to start moving. I nod and wonder why I feel like he's a little bit angry with me. "Yes, I need to start moving," I agree. "Shall I go swimming or something?" "No, you just need to get moving." I sit on the edge of the massage bed in my bra and jeans, and he stands at his desk, drinking his coffee and watching me move my shoulder back and forth, then tells me he has to make a phone call before leaving the room. I sit and stare at myself in the mirror, swollen and protruding, while moving my shoulder back and forth in sets of 10. When he comes back, he says, "That's good." I scold myself later for feeling like I'd finally done something right. Afterwards, I go to the supermarket and park too close to the trolley return bay. I cry when I can't fit out the door and drive home instead, thinking the bananas can wait. Today I receive 2 parcels, 1 postcard, and a large brown paper bag full of pre-cooked meals. 1 parcel from my mother has 8 lemons, 2 bars of chocolate, a bar of fancy soap, and a bottle of vitamin C. The other, a gift from my aunt, is an outfit for a newborn and a DVD of my cousin's funeral that I couldn't go to. I write a eulogy for my sister to read, a letter from our unborn child. I am already putting words in their mouth. I make an appointment with a Chinese herbalist recommended to me by a friend. When I tell him about my shoulder and that I'm 31 weeks pregnant, he says, "No problem. We fix you with no medicine." I don't tell him I've been taking codeine for the last 24 days and that I've also just gone back on antidepressants. I go to see another osteopath. This one is younger and a bit cheaper. I like how he pulls my arm into his chubby tummy and holds it in his soft pillow. I like his big ginger beard and his kind eyes. He doesn't ask me to take my top off. I remember going to visit a friend of mine when she was almost 8 months pregnant. She had swollen ankles and insisted on wearing skin-coloured ballet flats. There was no telling where her feet began. Only several days after I saw her, she was admitted to hospital with preeclampsia and went into labour very soon afterwards. I remember thinking, I won't do it like that. One day I'm sitting on the bed reading. I start to feel sick and then like I need to shit. I go to stand up and then I faint. When I come to, I sit on the edge of the bed and wonder if I'm dying. I think, this is it. I fucked it up so bad that I'm going into labour 9 weeks early. I try and do some deep breathing. I call the midwife. She sounds like she has a cold, and I ask her if she is okay. She tells me she has just woken up. It is 3:20 p.m. A wee baby came in the night, she says. That could be my baby, I think. She tells me it might be my low blood pressure that makes me faint and that standing up is the worst thing I can do in that situation, which makes me feel silly. She tells me not to worry, that it won't be affecting the baby. I can feel the tears coming, so I thank her 3 times before hanging up. I call in at work and cry. Then I have a bath and cry some more. Then I get out of the bath and Google fainting while pregnant. The baby kicks. Because of my shoulder and my depression, I stopped working. I didn't think it would be like this. I thought I would just keep going until the end. I even imagined being mid-lecture when my waters broke and found myself Googling things like, how will I know when my waters break, and how much water actually comes out. Another parcel arrives. This one has lemons and vitamin C, but also contains some children's books. When I call my mother to say thank you, I feel guilty that I can't be bothered listening to the 15-minute story about how she found the books. When I get off the phone, I feel frustrated and then I feel guilty about that too. Because I can't sit at the desk or a table, I do everything from the bed. There are large piles of books and papers on the floor and on the dresser in the bedroom. The bed used to be a sacred space, just for sleeping, resting, making love. The house feels messy and everything feels unfinished. I have to excuse myself many times from commitments, always ending my emails with, under normal circumstances, and if it were just me I had to think about. I'm pretty sure I'm still only thinking about me in all of this, but I don't say that. In her book, Mothers, Rachel Zucker tells a story about how she can't stop crying months after her friend has died. Her therapist tells her, "It's good that you're crying." I misread this as, "You are good at crying." I am good at crying. We go to a first birthday party. I feel nauseous and sit on a beanbag that later I won't be able to get out of without help, stuffing my face with a bagel and watching other people's kids loll around on the ground like miniature versions of their not very interesting parents. On the way home, I say to Ian, I don't want any of that. It's like life just stops, he says. He looks over at me as we're driving through South Dunedin, and I realize that I'm making a weird noise in my throat. Are you okay? He asks. The gurgle in the back of my throat turns into uncontrollable weeping. My GP makes an appointment with the Plunkett mental health nurse. Her name is Joy, and she looks a bit like my mum. She offers me a cup of tea, and then when she asks me how I am, I start to cry. She puts the tissues in front of me. What's your worst fear? She asks. That I won't like it, I say. She gives me several pamphlets about mindfulness, writes down the names of apps, and tells me to think about things like 5-minute walks around the garden, diaphragmatic breathing, and support networks. I want to leave, but I don't have anywhere to go. Her tissues are really soft. Zucker says she always wanted to be a mother. I don't recognize that feeling. I have had arguments with others who have had the decision taken away from them, in age or in illness, somehow convinced that they were more fortunate than me, for they didn't actually have to decide. The absurdity and arrogance of this embarrasses me so much, I almost shudder when I think about it now. When I lie in the bath, I can see small ripples forming on the surface when the baby moves. In the silence of my empty house on a Monday afternoon, lying in tepid bathwater, I apologize to this little being for not being able to grow them properly, for already being a fuck up. I meet a friend for dinner who I haven't seen for a while. Look at you, he says. People can say this kind of thing now. My body is a talking point. He makes sure I have a comfy chair to sit in and checks what I can eat before he orders for us both. After dinner, he says, can I ask you a personal question? When I consent, he asks me if I'm scared. He is almost 60 and childless. I feel so relieved that someone has finally asked. Yes, I say, I'm terrified. When I get home, more lemons have arrived.